Welcome to the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. I hope that you have had a chance to vote in the Walnut Grove 1883 election, which I think is a lot of fun. To vote, visit walnutgrovecast.com and look for the link. I would like to thank the following supporters for their continuous support. David Webb, Dana Wilkins, Chantel Dubois-Nishiyama, Peyton England, Rebecca Frederick, Angela Bowen from the Looking Back on My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast, Anne Quinn, Jill Stillman, Michelle Plug, Dottie Cashin, Suzanne Holland, Spunky Cheek, Sue Ingalls Wilder, Stephanie Carnes, Whitney Griggs, Leah Mitchell from the Retro TV podcast, Laura Solarin, Kim and Jack Lair from the Unsolved Mysteries Rewind podcast, Chris Hassler from the VHS Rewind podcast, Stacey Keller, Matt Mercier, Dean Butler, Gerald Lang from the OSI Files podcast, Ginny Comer, Ginny Schneider-Mitchell, Jeff Griffin, Julia Monin, Laura Furman, Megan Parker, Melissa Gilbert, The No Agenda Podcast, Rebecca Harris, Sherry Benner, Susan King, Teresa Trapp, Valerie Williams, Whitney, Julia Jin, Chris Cooling from the Forgotten TV Podcast, Don Roberts, Samantha Larson-Randall, Max Duration, Aaron Wortman, and Liz Serha, Brian S., Bobby Young, Brenda Worsley. Thank you so much for your support. If you would like to support Walnut Grovecast, please visit patreon.com/walnutgrovecast. Without further delay, please enjoy the newest episode. Walnut Grove is a place to be. Welcome to Walnut Grovecast. My name is Mark, and I am on today with... This is such a struggle, this thing. I really have to produce something. I'm putting it in the little book. I'm producing a beginning for this. I can't do this anymore on the fly. Welcome to the show, Kim Lair. How are you, Kim?
Thank you for having me. Hi, how are you?
I'm just kind of getting mad at myself as I'm like doing this on the fly instead of just kind of producing a simple piece that would be appropriate. But you know what? Here's the thing. If I were to create a simple piece in the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. The music does often change from in the beginning of each episode. So I'm wondering, I have to figure something out. I'm going to figure something out.
You got this.
All right. We are talking about one of the more requested shows of the time. For our time, and also, I think even before this time. And I turned to you to do it because I feel as though this is an episode maybe you didn't even look forward to doing, and I know I didn't. So why not have two people who don't know if they want to review this episode, review the episode? So the one that I've heard a lot about is there's two big episodes, right, that people are asking for. Do you want to talk about those episodes?
Yeah, so the first episode that everybody's been requesting since about March of 2020 is Quarantine and Plague. And you gave me the option of the two. I picked Plague because I personally find that one to be a little more of the time of what we're doing now.
It's more fun.
Yeah.
No, I have to agree that if I were to choose between one or the other, which one I want to watch as a Little House on the Prairie show, I would definitely have chosen the same one, The Plague, which is the one we're talking about today.
Yeah, season one, episode 18, actually 1 week, it aired 1 week after Doctor's Lady, which is like weird because we have two very heavy Doc Baker episodes back then.
What is going on with the building up of Hiram Baker?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I really do wish that they would have developed his character a little bit more, but actually, out of all of them, his character is relatively developed, right?
Yeah, oh, sure.
More so. I mean, this is also very early on in the Little House on the Prairie world. This is only episode 18 of the entire series, season one. This brings us back to January 29th, 1975. Mm-hmm. Really early. Wow. That just kind of, you know, because it's weird how this show in 1975 will look pretty close to the 78 episodes. And
oh, yeah.
I guess Hiram Finch, his character doesn't get as developed in the future. So, but we do get a lot of Dab's career. We get a lot of stuff going on in this particular episode. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know what? I'm just going to start the whole thing. It's always about money, Kim, when it comes to any of these type of things. It's never about like, it's always about saving a buck and regretting it. So for people who are like, well, I'm going to shop at Walmart. It's like, well, I'm going to shop Walmart too. And we're all going to end up in the plague. So here we go. We're stacking cornmeal, by the way. There must be, I don't know, a gross of sacks of cornmeal in here. Mm-hmm. And you can make everything from cornmeal, right? It's,
oh, yeah.
I mean, cornmeal was like the backbone of the American meat. Even nowadays, you know, you can make everything, corn chips and corn mush. I don't know. Yeah, what do you
polenta,
make from corn?
Polenta, grits, yeah. All that kind of stuff.
Bread, apparently. Yep. Corn bread.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like just looking at the sacks, like, all right, why is this so ominous? Like, just cornmeal with a cool, like, diamond shape in the middle. Mm-hmm. And then we get a little bit of a zoom in on one of the sacks. We see a cute little rat.
Oh, boy.
That music, the just that whole, like, the staccato and, like, all of the strange, like, modes being played in the orchestra is just really kind of fun to hear on Little House. And that's how it starts. I mean, we're a minute 38 in, and we now know this is not going to be a happy episode.
Oh, yeah. No.
Stacking corn and rats. Mm-hmm. But we go right into the story, which is really great.
Well, there's your receipt. Thank you. 25 cents change.
Thank you kindly.
Now, would it have been interesting to have done this scene before showing the rats?
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
It would have been a little
point.
Darker, actually. It would have been like, yeah. Oh, look, this guy's getting a deal. All right, let's hear his deal.
Oh, my cornmeal is here to sell.
I know. You could make a lot more on it, though, if you wanted to. There's not a poor family in these parts. It's not in your debt. We could never afford Hansen's prices.
Well, I don't blame Hansen. I was just lucky you made a good deal on this cornmeal. It's no more than right folks should benefit.
We appreciate it. Thanks again. You'll be in my family's prayers.
Bye.
Goodbye.
And yeah, I just think if, as he's leaving, it would have been kind of interesting to get that kind of like, you know, it's, yeah. No, there's rats. Don't eat it.
You know, it makes sense that Hansen has the mill, so he would be selling flour and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I just really never thought about it before.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that everyone goes to Hansen to grind their everything.
That makes sense. I just, like, I'm always used to, like, that's where you get your wood, you know? I just never thought about it.
It's funny because, you know, like, probably around the table when they were all kind of writing Little House on the Prairie for the TV show, they're like, well, where are they going to be doing this? We have to have everything in the town. They have, like, a little model set in front of them.
Yeah.
Like those paper sets that person posts.
Oh, my God. Those are so cool.
I want to so badly. All right. This, now that I'm saying it, I kind of should do it. I want to just kind of scale them up and print them on larger paper, on larger cardstock at Staples, because it's pretty cheap to print stuff at Staples and make a larger thing. But then I'm like, where am I going to put this?
Yeah, totally.
I guess I can glue it to the ceiling. You know, that would be kind of an interesting thing.
Be a trip, but, yeah.
But yeah, I love the work that they do, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes because I don't remember off the top of my head what the name of their group is. But they offer all that stuff for free, and that's pretty cool of them. I think that's really great. It's good to see that in the Little House in the Prairie community, like just kind of giving back. It's good stuff. But why do we know this character? Why do we know the actor's name is Matt Clark? And yes. Do you want to mention where we might see him again?
Well, he is in Mortal Mission, and so is his son, who is Bradley Green. They are both in Mortal Mission, a.k.a. the Anthrax episode.
Yeah, I mean, this guy is all about it. but oddly enough, he does not play the same character. Which is
right. No, neither of them do.
But it would have been interesting to kind of write this character into it. You know, they could have, I think.
Yeah.
Little effort. Maybe they forgot.
It's possible.
He's, no, this actor has been in so many different things. Matt Clark's still around. He's still acting. Not too recently, but back in 2014 is his last thing. But he's done a lot of things. He's shown up. He's one of these faces that you really kind of see pop up in a lot of different places.
Yeah, I know him from The Practice personally. He's also the bartender in Back to the Future 3. But when I was doing like a little deep dive on him today, I found that his son is actually this like hot shot Hollywood producer. He produces all the Cosmos series.
Oh, really? The reboot of Cosmos.
Yeah, exactly. And he also produced A Million Ways to Die in the West, which is the last credit on our guy Matt Clark's, you know, IMDb profile.
Yeah, putting dad to work.
Mm-hmm.
Good for him. That's yeah. Awesome. I love it when stuff like that goes on. But you're saying he's actually in that episode of Little House in 1979.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he's actually not his actual son, but the guy who plays his son in this episode.
Oh, okay.
Is also in that, obviously not playing the same character.
Gotcha. So it's good. Like, you know, we're all like kind of happy about selling cornmeal. We're all like getting ready. Hansen,
everybody but Hansen is happy about it.
Yeah, Hansen's looking at it from across. It doesn't feel like it's right across the street at first, but it is. Yeah. And
it's definitely the building where that guy had Pa take out the cattle mortgage on him. You know, it's that place where the cornmeal is.
Yeah, it's a weird. If we really start mapping out Little House, we start kind of really getting kind of a feel for the town, right?
Mm-hmm.
But here we go. This is Hansen wondering where the heck's this price lowering stuff is. It's like, again, Walmart with their rollbacks.
Did you see that?
He also bought like 5 bags of corn. That must be like 200 pounds of cornmeal.
I think they're like, they look about like 25-pound bags, but it's weird because I also noticed he had an odd number when Mr. Edwards later says that it's like a buy one, get one free deal.
Oh,
so I don't know why he had an odd number.
I'll just throw in another sack. This one comes with a rat.
Bolton just went up the street with a load of cornmeal.
The last 3 days, everybody's been going up the street with a load of cornmeal.
I don't know how Pettison does it.
You have to lower your prices.
Well, Charles knows I can't do that. I'm just breaking even now.
That's the truth.
I just have to hope that he runs out. Will you have that order ready today?
Right after lunch.
Good.
It's weird to hear Charles put work off for something as menial as food.
It's so true.
And you don't really see him just kind of sitting around eating either, unless he's at home.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's true. I didn't think about that.
It's just, I thought it was weird. It's like, I'll get to it after I'm done eating. Drink it from my dirty, I was going to call it thermos. What is it? Canteen. Jeez. But we do get a really cool Charles. We get another example of Dr. Ingalls in this, which I think is always fun.
Yeah.
I love Dr. Ingalls. You know, when he reports to duty, you know things are really bad. Things are terrible. Things actually don't get much worse, but they're talking about the price and they're like saying, you know, it's impossible for this price and everybody's going to be buying it. And according to Charles, he has this to add.
No, I don't blame you. It's all good when the bread comes out of the oven.
It's all good when the bread comes out of the oven.
Mm-hmm.
That should be a bumper sticker. So yeah, one thing we get to see is when they're at, what's his name? I forgot
Bolton,
the,
Eric Bolton.
Yeah. But Sylvie, his wife is Sylvie Bolton. So yeah. Sylvie has this cool oven.
Yes.
What is this thing?
It's an old linseed oil container. And she has just like carved one side out of it. It's got a nice little handle in it, and that's just kind of baking everything. And so it's getting heat from all sides, and so just putting it right onto the fire. It's like a poor person oven.
But it's pretty cool. You know, I like poor people stuff. And
oh my God, it's so cool. It's so inventive. And also, it's pretty accurate to the linseed oil that was packaged up in the 1800s. I have a picture. All that's different, basically, is where the handle is.
So what, that would be made of tin or something?
I would assume so, yeah. And then just carve out one side, and then when it sits there, it's kind of getting heat from all sides. It's like a little makeshift oven. It's pretty cool.
No, and not to have an opinion about the people who are making the breads, it's a little dark. It's a little dark, that bread. But I do think it's really kind of, I loved it. I actually like their little house. They have more cooking stuff around. And I do enjoy seeing that type of thing. I've never seen a little oven like that. So I always kind of wondered, how did they cook bread without like a brick oven?
I don't know. Yeah. It's cool though. I mean, I really was impressed by that. That definitely stuck out to me.
But yeah, I started thinking, was it cast iron? And I'm like, it'd be way too heavy to be cast iron. I mean, you could have like
this is like a 1 gallon tin of linseed oil, but like, father and son are like horse playing before dinner, and mom's, Sylvie's like, you better clean up, you two. I got two loaves of cornmeal tonight.
And their son is super. Oh, yeah, so they're going to comment on the bread.
Mm, that smells good. Two loaves for one supper?
Two loaves, Paul.
And not because it's a special day either. We can have two loaves whenever we want, ain't that right, Sylvie?
Thanks to Mr. Peterson.
Well, come on, sit down. It'll get cold.
And the kid is so cute. Oh, man, they're all so happy. It's like, little do they know that they're on Little House on the Prairie.
I know. And then they sit down to, like, say grace, and they're like, thank you to Mr. Peterson for, like, feeding our bellies for so cheap. Like, they are just the sweetest family.
There is a subplot, though, of Little House Dentistry.
You guys do not want to Google how dentistry was performed in the 1800s. I have so many pictures that will never leave my mind. Oh my God. Tooth extractions.
Yeah, it's basically pliers and a pull.
And like somebody will like tie your head down to the chair while the dentist, quote unquote, has pliers and does everything but like put their knee in your chest and just yank real good. And there's no medicine for that.
No. I have a belt of whiskey.
Yeah, exactly. And so our little toothache havers, Laura, we're all at the little house, and Laura's just like, I can't eat my beef, Paul. Like, my tooth hurts. So, dentist Ingles comes in and checks her teeth out.
Yeah, so this is that little bit of a discussion there.
Let me see. Which one?
Uh-huh.
This one here?
Uh-huh.
This one here? Let me just poke at it.
It's not loose.
But it hurts.
Could be a bad tooth. I'll take you and see Doc Baker tomorrow. Meantime, just drink your milk.
Laura, that's what comes of snitching sugar out of the cupboard. Sweets are the worst thing in the world for your teeth.
I forgot about the word snitching.
I know.
I forgot about it as being used as stealing,
Snitches get stitches.
Huh. I wonder, I think that saying is like for like, rats.
No, I know. I'm just trying to pull it together.
I wonder if that was a saying, or I'm not really sure. I kind of remember it being used like that. Yeah, we'll look into it. So they also have a really nice bread thing on their table, which I thought was interesting. And we have an actual roast on the table. Very interesting. Very dry, but a roast nonetheless. And I like to see this type of stuff. I love to see their tableware and that type of stuff. Really kind of, there was something about this episode that I really liked. It felt more modern than it was. It felt outside of season one.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, they're going to take him into,
take her
into, town. They're still talking about it though. They're still talking about how candy can really rot out your teeth. They knew this even back then.
Willie's are. He bit me once.
He bit you?
Uh-huh.
Well, if he does it again, I want you to cuff him good.
Now, this is kind of a weird comment. You hear them, go back and forth with this type of talk, right?
Yeah, totally.
And we even have Ma kind of playing the game a little bit.
Charles.
I don't like that. I don't have any biting.
I don't like that. We also have a very short-haired Charles Ingalls here.
Oh, thank God.
I don't know. I like the longer. Just really? It's a little too long. This one's more like a Lego hair that they click on.
Yeah.
Too much over the ears, Charles.
Yeah. He needs a lesson.
Your father's right. If he bites you again, cuff him good.
I already did.
I'm through. And as for your teeth and eating candy, you wait and see. Nellie and Willie are going to have bad ones in a few years. You fetch some water for the dishes.
Now we learn, he's real bossy too. Like, fetch some water for the dishes. Like, what's Laura doing here? All she has is toothache. Doesn't hurt your feet. So it's just kind of weird how we get into this other thing. We learn something about Harriet, which is really kind of funny.
Yeah.
And it never comes up again, but it could have been like a funny joke to continuously bring up.
Yes, Pa. I told Nellie her teeth would fall out. She didn't care. She'd just buy teeth like her mother has.
I didn't know Mrs. Wilson had store-bought teeth.
Well, how could you tell? She never smiles.
Even saying store-bought is, it's so season one.
Yeah, totally.
And I think maybe the snitch thing, snitching sugar from the cupboard, I don't know. I think maybe these are throwbacks to the way things were said back in the olden days, as I add an E-N to the word old. Not really sure, but so Laura's in the dentist's office, and I don't know, he's a simple doctor, Kim.
I know.
He touches upon everything. He seems to, I would say he's the smartest guy in Walnut Grove.
Oh, yeah, I would definitely say that. You know, keep in mind, he is just off of having his little heart broken into a million pieces.
Yeah, it's really tough when you put it into perspective like that, right? It's if you look at the timeline.
Yeah, so they're like just saying, you know, Laura is going to need to have that tooth pulled. And right as they're kind of getting down to business, Mr. Bolton comes running in. He's like, oh, my boy, he's sick. He's had a fever for a few days. Doc Baker's like, all right, I'll be out there next.
Yeah, I'm going to play that clip real quick.
Doctor, back here.
Bolton.
Sorry to bother you.
Nonsense. I'm only in the middle of major surgery. What is...
And Laura's face just is... She just goes to show you that Melissa Gilbert really was kind of a real... Like a very decent and solid actress at a young age. Her face has the same exact face that we would all have. Michael Landon's just kind of grinning, and she's... Like, I'm going to throw up any second now.
Oh, my God. And, seriously.
And even, like, Doc, you know, it's like saying, I'm going through major surgery. It's like, oh.
I know. Messing with her.
Somebody who hates the dentist? Oh, my God.
Listen, it's about my boy. He's down with the fever. Said it a couple of days now.
Well, can't you bring him in?
I was hoping you could come out. He's so weak from the fever, I hate to bundle him up and take him.
All right. All right, Bolton, I'll be out this afternoon.
Thank you, Doctor. I'll see you then.
Hope he's feeling better.
Thank you.
I'm going to let this play out because it's a decent zinger at the end from Laura.
Well, don't look so sad. You can put your tooth under your pillow tonight, and the tooth fairy might just leave you a penny. Now, what do you say about that?
I just as soon not have a penny.
I just think it's delivered perfectly. Mm-hmm. What happened to this sweet girl? No comment. So we move on to Paul. Poor Paul. He's burning up. We don't even get a number as to what his fever might be.
But yeah, Doc's trying to downplay it, but it's bad.
Yeah, and Doc has the... Even though, like, he's making the comment in front of Laura, he's kind of jostling her. He really does have a really wonderful bedside manner, I would say.
Oh, probably, nothing like it.
I would want him to tell me if anything is wrong, personally.
Yes, definitely.
No, Paul's bed is pretty nice. I don't know if...
I didn't notice.
Well, I didn't notice it until just now. This is what happens when I freeze frame it. It's like I start kind of looking at the different things. But it's like a nice wrought iron or brass bed. It has like a footboard and it's nice. I mean, maybe it's their bed, but even though it's a luxury item, Kim.
Yeah.
So he's taking his temperature.
How high is my temperature?
Oh, doctors never give out information.
Why not?
Well, because if they did, the patients would end up knowing everything, and we'd be out of a job.
Now, we're like, oh boy, because his face just kind of dropped when he looked at the temperature. I'm going to guess like a 105 type or 4 temperature.
I read a little bit about symptoms of typhus, and I know that your fever goes about 104 to 106.
Oof. I mean, that's where your brain starts frying.
And yeah.
Just really terrible. But so he basically goes right to action here.
Eric, I want you to go into town, pick up some ice. I want to get the boy's fever down.
What is it, doctor?
I can't be sure yet. He's got a pretty good fever going, but I've seen fevers like this come and go like nothing, so there's no use worrying. Now go get that ice.
Bossy.
Sylvie, I want you to get some rags. I want to try to cool them with some alcohol.
And that was like it. I was thinking, there's really no other way to cool somebody except by using alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of ice, of course. Mm-hmm. Or maybe putting them in the lake. I'm not really sure what.
I was thinking that too.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, I guess desperate at this point. Sylvie doesn't look too sweaty at this point, but in the next shot, she's going to get things, and she falls right into Doc's arms.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns into a whirlwind, like, romance. It's like a... She's basically, we didn't even realize it, but poor Sylvie was probably holding everything together and not even talking about that she doesn't feel well because she's so worried about Paul.
I know there's a lot of that in this episode, like parents putting on a brave face. But Doc Baker swoops her up, puts her in her bed, and then we get to see a close-up of the cornmeal, and there's like leaves all over it.
Yeah, this is just the worst. I mean, my pets have gotten fleas in the past, and everything. Whenever I see them, I basically throw them. Like, get away from me! And we must treat the whole area. The entire town must be bombed. Bring in the sulfur. It's the mangy dog across the street. I blame everyone but myself for not hiring somebody to treat the area. But my white dog, it's easy to see fleas. And 2 years ago, he actually got fleas at the groomer. And that really, really, really annoyed me. And in the past, I think I've spoken about how much we pay for our grooming. And this happened, and it was just, I don't know. It's hard to get me like riled up and really mad about something, but that really got me upset because all of a sudden we had fleas in the house. And it was like, well, we got to hire somebody for this. Anyway. But it's all gone, and they haven't had fleas at all. But we give them a pill every 6 months, and they seem to like this pill, Kim.
No, good. I'm glad to hear it.
Like most little kids, I think you count money that you have not earned yet. And Laura's, it's kind of a cute little scene. I'm not going to play it. It's a little long. But she's counting her teeth, and she's kind of saying how much it's all going to be worth if she gets a penny each. And she gets up to 26 cents. Not bad.
No.
Not a bad haul. Mary looks a little concerned that she might try to yank out some teeth early.
Honestly. I mean, she's like shoving her dirty little fingers. It's got to be like a wound in her mouth.
Right?
So nasty.
Yeah. I mean, at best, there's stitches. But I mean.
Yeah. See? Snitches get stitches. Oh, I told you. That's what it's about.
Crisscross. It's like a Hitchcock film right here. But things kind of spiral out of control pretty quickly. We get a crazy scene of Doc putting a ton of the cleanest ice that in Walnut Grove.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. No, they're like in the classic ice, like mummy sarcophagus kind of thing. He just has them wrapped in blankets, wrapped in ice, wrapped in more blankets. And we have Sylvie in one room going through it, and we have little Paul in the other room going through it.
Now, this kind of reminded me, not to plug our other podcast, but there's Unsolved Mysteries Rewind. And we did an episode where we talk about the frozen girl. And the girl who, I forget what state she was in.
Minnesota.
And her car breaks down and she has to walk in the freezing cold, like minus 5,000. and she's about to see her friend's house, and she collapses, and the next day we get to see the reenactment. And it kind of reminded me of that without the frost.
Oh, my God. That was a crazy one.
Yeah, I think that comes out next week. But
oh.
I think. I don't know. I just did the artwork for it last night. So the artwork, I don't know. I'm going to send it to you. I want to see what you think of it because it's a little creepy, actually.
Okay.
But anyway, it's Unsolved Mysteries Rewind. Check it out. Yeah. The podcast. That's our little plug right there. So, but Sylvie is also an ice because we don't know what's going on. Everything is kind of spiraling. It seems to only be affecting two people so far, thankfully.
Yeah. I don't know how the dad doesn't have it, but Eric, the dad, like, calls Doc Baker in because Sylvie has taken a turn for the worse.
I think it's a lot like coronavirus in a way. Some people get it, some people don't. And yeah. Or people get it and they're asymptomatic. And I'm going to guess that is just the way it is with some things. They all ate the bread, I'm sure. And that is really by ingesting the bread, I'm sure. I'm always amazed that things don't die when you cook them.
I know.
But I guess you wouldn't cook bread to over 212 degrees Fahrenheit, so.
Well, the internal temperature of bread is 195 when it's fully cooked. So you did say they were overcooked. Those were probably 212
degrees. Well, apparently not. I would imagine that by, anything over 212, not anything, but I think those things would die at that point because it would be sterilizing.
I would hope so, but yeah, we get poor little Sylvie has died.
Yeah, I'm going to play that little scene. And the way he determines that she's dead is pretty much the way I would. I mean, it's really not much. This is 1875. I mean,
what? Yeah, it's unceremonious. That's
yeah. He puts his ear to her chest, basically.
I'll be with the boy.
This is crazy. I mean, who can go through a psychological trauma like this, right? 12 hours ago, right? We're eating bread, basically, or a day ago. And now my wife is dead.
I know.
Who's going to make the bread? We have a ton of this cornmeal.
Yeah, he's just sitting in the corner like his world is shattered. Like, oh, my God. And then we just do a hard cut to the church. We are bringing in the sheaves.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're bringing the sheaths, and Doc kind of just storms in. I mean, everybody's having a fine old time, and then he comes in. His collars are all out. He looks cool, kind of, a little,
I'm sorry to interrupt like this, Reverend. I've just come from the Bolton place. Sylvie Bolton died early this morning. I'm not sure what it is yet. The boy is sick with it, too. But until I know for sure, I want everyone to stay at their own place.
Well, what do you think it is, Doctor?
Now, I'm surprised that Hansen didn't say. And I mean, be the first one to have the conspiracy, right? Like, he's like the QAnon of 1875.
Oh, God.
It's like, you know what I think it is. Yeah, I'm laughing. It's not funny. I'm just trying to find humor here. But I'm just really kind of surprised it wasn't Hansen who said, I bet it was that cheap cornmeal.
Honestly. I mean, he's definitely got it stuck in his craw. He's already angry about it. But I'm sure we'll get to this. But this is very much so the world in which we are living currently.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, quarantine, social distancing.
Yeah, and he does say to everybody what his instruction is to do. I mean, he is the Department of Health for Walnut Grove. And,
yeah.
And just like, a lot of people have this kind of dim outlook as to what we're going through right now. And, of course, I'm no fortune teller, although I sometimes claim to be. All of these things do end in our history, right? There's always an end. It doesn't always get better, but right away. But it does end. So I mean, just hopefully, if people are kind of having a tough time, I just hopefully they realize that historically speaking, this all ends.
Yeah, what goes up?
Solutions are found. But here we go.
I'm not positive, but I think it's typhus.
Cue to cutest little boy behind Miss Beetle, by the way. And he just had the face of horror. Like somebody just said, you're not going to get that Lego set. You know? they had to do something. And Hanson, everybody just is like, what? I thought he said, I think you should all, everybody should go home. I thought that was in that particular.
He said it already. He was you guys need to stay at your homes. So we figure this out. We're doing like homeschooling now, distance learning. Everybody stay as far away apart as possible. Like don't leave your homes if you don't have to. Try not to interact with each other.
Because back then, for most people, I would say it was a death sentence. If you got typhus, it was a death sentence.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just crazy. I don't know how much time is supposed to have gone by because we just don't have any semblance of time, really. Like, we don't understand. But Pa, all right, we're going to see what Pa's doing, and I have to guess maybe this is a couple weeks later. I'm not sure.
I wish I could go hunting, Pa.
Well, just because there's no regular school, that doesn't mean it's time to stop learning, you know.
I know.
God willing, it won't be for too long.
How do you get typhus, Pa?
Get it from fleas.
Jack has fleas sometimes.
No, it's not that kind. These fleas come from rats, Hampine.
Now, as soon as Laura said, dogs get, you know, Jack has fleas, I thought about the time my dogs had fleas, and I'm thinking, I'm going to have them put down today.
Like, oh, my God.
I can't risk myself. Come on. No, Ed, I don't know. It's a very scary thing. This is all, I mean, everything kind of carries fleas, too. I mean, you know, raccoons and
opossums. Yeah.
Do you call them possums or opossums? And is there a difference?
As a matter of fact, there is a difference. It's their tail. But there is a difference. I can't tell on sight, but I just mostly call them possums.
Can Jack tell the difference?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if we get opossums here. I think that's like an Australian thing.
Oh, really? All right. I'm going to go look it up later. But I know that sometimes we get them and they freak me out because they have the little gross mouse tail.
Yeah, I had that one in my yard the other day that I told you about that came like dying, that's right, and I had to go shoot it, and then my gun jammed.
You heard right, people. She had to put him down. So I just hit my monitor, and as I hit my bell, I turned off my monitor. Sorry.
Okay, so. But I just want to say it was dying. Like, I did not just shoot him.
No, of course not. It was in pain, and you took it out of its misery.
But Pa's like going to go out hunting, and Ma's like, oh, Charles, like, you can't hunt rabbits because I read Carrie a book about bunny rabbits, and she loves them now. So he's like, okay, I'll not get a rabbit, wink, wink.
Exactly. It's like, just let her take a nap next to the twigs.
Exactly. So he's out hunting, and he sees an ominous sight in Walnut Grove, which is just like a team hitched up to a wagon, but there's nobody driving the team.
Yeah, but there kind of was. He was slouched over in the front, and I'm just thinking,
he's got a sick wife in the back.
Dead guy, but he's not dead. He's barely alive.
He's
pretty much doing. Oh, it was a pretty sad scene because I also felt bad for the horses. Like, the horses are just like, I don't know, let's just keep walking, you know? The whole thing, it's very sad. The episode basically takes a downhill spiral because that, they don't realize it, but there's a little bit of a spoiler, and I'll play the clip, but this is the last time Charles will be home for a while. And sometimes you just don't know if it's going to be the last time you see your loved one. You know, we just have to remember that at all times. So Doc is just basically going around checking on everyone.
He's like, you guys stay in your house, but you can shout to me if you're okay. He's just going wagon to wagon.
Think about this. This is a job. I mean, this is every day, probably. He's going around making sure everybody is alive and not coming down with something.
And I'm sure he's still got Paul in, you know, Walnut Grove ICU. Like, I'm sure he's still taking very serious care of him.
And nobody's paying Doc for this or anyone. This is all because it's community effort. And, you know, it's just really crazy. It's not like he's going to send everyone a bill at the end of the month. Right. Craziness. And we have this storm coming. I don't really know what the representation of the storm was so much.
I genuinely think it was the Santa Ana winds in California.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there are so many times that it is ridiculously windy outside in Walnut Grove, and I'm pretty sure that's just a California.
Well, we have a weird scene later on where I took a screenshot of them. I'm like, what the hell are those, like 90 mile per hour winds?
I know, Mary's like holding onto the clothesline and stuff.
Yeah. I know. Oh, I'm sorry.
I was trying to be all deep about it yesterday to Jack. I'm like, maybe like the storm's moving in and the winds have changed.
I was like, no, it's just windy.
No, it's windy. They were like, we got to film. We have to film, guys.
Doctor.
Mrs. Ingalls.
How's the Bolton boy?
Well, he's holding his own. I've been going from farm to farm checking. So far, so good.
Everyone here is fine. Charles is just out hunting.
Well, give him my best. I'll drop by in a couple of days.
Thank you, Doctor.
All right, a couple days. So, I mean, if he stops by everybody's house two or three times a week, I mean, that's a job. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Holy moly. He might have to buy some of that cheap cornmeal to afford to eat. But luckily, he has a cupboard full of, you know, pickled preserves and people giving him chickens and all that kind of stuff. And Charles probably gave him chickens for pulling Laura's tooth.
Oh, God. But brings those people from the wagon into Doc Baker's office.
Well, it's his office, too, really. I mean, it's Dr. Ingalls.
Sure. So Doc arrives and he's like, well, what's this doing here? And he comes in, and these two little old people, the Harpers, they are in bad shape.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a long clip, but I'm going to play through it.
I came across them while I was hunting. Pretty bad.
It's very visual.
Carl? Doc. My wife. She's going to be fine. Just fine. I didn't want to move. And when I got sick, I got afraid. I was afraid nobody would find us.
So Doc basically determines that, without a doubt, in his professional opinion, this is typhus.
Yeah, because typhus has a very distinctive rash, and he sees the rash. He's like, oh, boy, this is what I thought. It is typhus.
Oh, did you go as far as finding out what that rash looks like?
I mean, I Googled the symptoms. I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't. I kind of stopped on the whole visual aspect of a lot of things.
Now I
kind of
want to see. Okay.
I get squeamish. I'm going to guess it's kind of just like your regular old nasty rash, but. So basically, Charles heads over to Olson's to basically get supplies.
Oh, it's not too bad, by the way. Sorry, I'm just Googling it now. Looks like he just got covered in mosquito bites or something.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, like almost like a heat rash.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now I feel better.
I'll be right down, Ingalls.
No, stay there.
It's typhus, Nels. I've been exposed to it. Doc needs sheets and blankets. He's going to make a hospital out of the church.
You're welcome to anything I've got in the storeroom.
I don't want to go into your place. Take everything you can over to the church and just leave it there.
I'll do it right away.
Thank you.
Again, a little bossy, but, you know, hey, it is a tense time.
How much money do you think the Olsons are out this episode?
I mean, you mean because their store's closed and they're also giving stock?
Yeah, mainly the giving stock. I didn't even think about the losing clothes. They're giving kettles, shovels, blankets, ice, sheets, pillows.
I can't believe they didn't run out of ice. Actually,
honestly, it was getting close. Yeah.
Basically, there's two heartbreaking scenes here, and this is one of them. I thought that was really kind of heartbreaking. Charles goes home to basically let the girls and Ma know that. Well, I'll just let the clip speak for itself.
Charles, what's wrong?
The Harpers are sick. Came across them near Willow Lake. I took them into the dock. They've got typhus.
Oh, my God, no.
I'm not going to be able to come home for a while. Can't take a chance. I'll stay in town and help the doc. You girls mind your ma.
Yes, Pa.
Keep up with your studies.
We will, Pa.
Take care of yourself.
So it's super sad.
And Mom's like cry smiling because yeah. she's like putting on a brave face for the girls and for Charles, but she's like so worried about him. Oh, it breaks my heart.
I can see Karen Grassley saying, I can't make myself tear up. And then Michael Landon saying, just look in my eyes.
Let the water in your eyes match mine.
Now, Charles is riding a beautiful horse. It's a little bit of a shorter horse than normal, but it's like one of these. I don't know if it's a different type of horse. It's also no saddle, but it's a really, really beautiful, muscular horse. I've never seen one. I would be more comfortable around a horse like this instead of the big, stupid, large ones that make me scared. So, but these look like the kind that are kind of bred to be a little smaller. I want to see if I don't know anything about horses, but this one just looks to me to be a little bit different. Anyway, so I just thought the whole thing, this is the introduction of the pain and the sorrow of social distancing.
And Pa went to go tell Reverend Alden what was up, and Reverend Alden's like, nope, I'm helping you. Like, I'm not going to stay away. I need to help the people.
Right. I can't just sit at home. Where would I eat?
Exactly.
Reverend, what?
I told him not to come. He wouldn't listen.
It's a fool thing to do.
Then I'm in good company, Doctor.
They love being kind of harsh to Reverend sometimes, right?
Yeah.
I like all the guys kind of, you know. They rib him a little bit.
Yeah, rib him.
But I like the fact that they don't treat him with kid gloves just because he's a reverend.
I mean, Paul punches his lights out in one episode.
Not on purpose, but we are turning the church slash schoolhouse into like a makeshift hospital.
And so Doc tells Paul, you bring Paul, the little boy, over here, and just let everybody know that this is the hospital, and if anybody needs care to come here.
And here's that clip.
We'll need some large kettles to boil the sheets and blankets. Olson will have them. But tell him to leave them outside the church.
All right.
Reverend, ask Olson to bring some shovels. We'll have to bury the dead right away.
This next scene. Oh my God. I genuinely think it's one of the more disturbing Little House scenes of all time.
Where Charles goes and he's doing wellness checks as well. Mm-hmm. And he goes in and he's looking for Eric. You know, Eric is the one whose wife had passed away, the first one.
Right, whose boy said.
Yeah, Paul is not feeling well. And he just can't find him anywhere. Mm-hmm. So he sees from a distance under the tree that needs to come down tomorrow.
Honestly, with those winds, my God.
But I will say that I would say that this is super symbolic of death. There's no doubt about it. The tree was like so creepy. It was almost like an Ingmar Bergman film. You know, like I could see it in one of his films. And I don't know. It's a really heartbreaking scene. It's kind of a long scene, but I'm going to cut to the gist of it.
Now you tell Miss Beetle, my son won't be in school today.
No, he won't be in school because he has passed away and he's in his arms.
Yeah, but he's sleeping. He's just sleeping. Yeah, it's such a nice day. We're going to go fishing. Like, he can't be in school today.
Right. Right. You can't miss this wind.
I know. Yeah.
Looking at each other and Charles.
I'll tell her.
That wasn't worth it just for that one little clip. But the music is really ominous and it really is just a sad and beautiful shot. I always gotta grab screenshots of these things. One thing I did not see in this particular episode was a fern.
Oh, no, I didn't even think to look.
I have a keen eye out for ferns, the ferns of Little House on the Prairie. It's going to be a coffee table book one day. taking screenshots wherever I can. Charles goes and lets Isaiah know. And Isaiah's
like, he goes to his little like bachelor pad, which I don't think we've ever seen before.
I feel like we have, and I would have to go back and see, but I'm not 100% sure. Is this not the place where he was with
his family.
Blanche?
I think that's a different place. I think he moves in with his family and then he gets a divorce.
Yeah, so maybe this was the you know, cornerstone of his bachelorhood.
Probably.
he's like, oh, I'm just cooking up some corn dodgers. Like, you want some? And he's like, oh, BTF pause. Like, by the way, everybody has typhus. Yes. It is a bad situation. My family's okay. And Edward's like, I'll come help. I know you guys need help. And Pa is like, you can't, because if God forbid something should happen to me, like, I need to know that you're okay and that you can take care of Caroline and the girls.
Yeah. And the whole thing, it's very, very sad. And the numbers are going up and up and up. This is where it started really resonating with me with COVID-19.
And oh my God, it's crazy.
This is about the only time we'll talk about the current state of affairs. But, you know, again, people have sent me dozens of emails asking for this, and people are like, when are you going to do this one? Well, here it is. So, but yeah, this is the one that resonated where, you know, each day you would turn on the news and you would regret it immediately because the numbers would be reported.
Mm-hmm.
So, here we go.
11. When's it going to stop?
There's no way of telling. Thought by keeping everyone apart, we'd have a chance. But I just don't know.
This is a conversation that our governors all had, right? I mean, this is one, whether you're, I don't care whether you're red or blue, whatever. This is a conversation just from a humanitarian standpoint that everyone just basically looked each other in the eyes and thought, we're doing what we're supposed to do, and it's still spreading.
And, it's very prescient.
It is very up the now. It's crazy how the similarities
and that. But
and the simple solution. Well, not solution, but the simple methods of trying to stop it. Kind of archaic, almost, right?
It's like do what you can.
It's in our DNA, really, to think. All right, well, if they're getting sick, stay away from them. You know.
I was going to play the rest of this little clip.
Okay, please.
From all over. Family from here, a family from there, and it's spreading. I don't know why. We could only find the source.
Doc even has the quarantine haircut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does.
The source. Are you all right, Ingles?
Yeah. Come on, I'll give you a hand.
Now, Charles is finally showing some wear, right? For the first time. I mean, this is only season one, buddy.
I know, our infallible Charles.
But, you know, I think there's some good acting in this particular episode. I think this is a, I don't think this is a great first episode.
No, but this next scene is phenomenal, and it was my favorite scene of the whole thing. I think Michael Landon knocked it out of the park. You just want to go run up to him and hug him, but you can't because you're social distancing.
Now, do you mean the voiceover part?
Well, yeah, she gets a little voiceover. Laura does, in the middle of the episode.
I mean, I don't know if that's ever happened before.
I don't know, but she's like, you know, Pa's been gone for a while. He stops by every few days just to see us and make sure we're doing okay. But he hasn't come by in a few days, so we're worried. And then they hear him outside. So they leave Carrie in the high chair, and they all go run out and see him.
And then, oh, it's so good.
Yeah. I'm going to actually play from the voiceover.
A week went by. Pa came to see us every few days. He looked tired, and we knew Ma was worried. But she always smiled and pretended that she wasn't.
He's just after Laura.
Yes, ma'am.
And we have a whole chicken on the table, or possibly a duck.
Mm-hmm. Well, he doesn't want skinny girls when he comes back.
Could you marry?
I can't.
What do you mean you can't?
Pa said he'd be by today. Why didn't he come?
Your father will come when he can, Mary.
But he said he'd come.
Carolyn! Eat supper?
Yes. We were just about finished.
You want something?
Yeah, I'd like a little salt rising bread.
I'll get it, Pa. When can he come home, Pa?
Real soon, Mary. Real soon.
Still hot, Pa.
Hey, you girls get inside and finish your supper. I want you all skinny when I get home. I feel like I'm courting you again.
If you were, my Ma and Pa'd be standing in the doorway.
Your Pa did keep an eye on me, didn't he? I sure would like to see your folks again someday.
Was a really sweet scene.
Yeah. I know. And he's still putting on the romance.
Yeah, like he's just like, you know, you get ready for me, woman.
Corn Dodgers and Salt Rising Bread, which are mentioned in this episode, are both featured in my fave, you know, Little House Cookbook.
And I was looking at the recipes today, and Salt Rising Bread has cornmeal in it.
But he didn't buy the cheap corn flour. I mean, cornmeal.
True, that's true, but I was just like, I'm guessing they omitted that. And it's not even like it's in it, it's like on the bottom, like how pizza is on the bottom.
I mean, Charles is, I mean, I'm going to say Charles is more along the lines of the type of guy who goes to Trader Joe's for his cornmeal. You know, he gets the organic stuff. But, you know, I just, even when he was talking to Hanson, he really alluded to him not participating in the cheap cornmeal.
Yeah, exactly.
He was like, I got flour to sell.
He probably gets it wholesale. I don't know. I feel like he has some, I mean, why would, here's the thing. Why does Charles know how much Hanson's paying? So that's what I mean. Maybe that's alluding to some type of deal that they have. And also, isn't Charles a corn farmer?
Well, it's wheat, and I know that they say he has flour that he's trying to sell. And so when Mr. Edwards is like, sorry, Charles, I got to go get that corn meal, even over your flour, he's like, that's okay, I understand. So maybe they're just eating flour, what everybody else is eating cornmeal, because that's what they have.
That's interesting. Well, things will never have the true answers to.
Darn it.
This next scene, Charles comes back to the makeshift hospital church, and we get, I don't know how you feel about this, the use of the music to let us know what character is in the room. I didn't like it.
I loved it.
All right. I liked it, but I didn't, it didn't provoke the emotions that I think that it attended to.
Oh, see, for me, it was right on. As soon as I heard it, I was like, oh no.
All right. Here we go. He walks in, he sees somebody among the sick, somebody laying down, as an unshaven doc is with his ice pick and going to town.
He rode in this afternoon.
they're playing it in a minor key, right? to provoke that kind of the sadness of it, almost like Taps, really. But it just didn't resonate with me. But he's one of my favorite characters. Not my favorite character, that would be Mary, but only temporarily. I never realized how much of I see it from time to time where there's this kinship between the two characters of Isaiah and Charles, but it's like there's a real brotherly love.
Yeah, I mean, just the fact that he was like, I need you to, like, make sure my wife gets along okay without me. It's like, oh my God, you are trusting this guy with your life.
I just want a prequel. I want to know where this friendship blossomed. And I'm not writing fan fiction.
Maybe the books are for you.
I know. I really have to dive into all of them. So, yeah, he's basically just kind of rubbing his head. One of the people is covered with what appears to be some type of Native American print.
Yeah, there's like three or four of them have these like Native American blankets. Meanwhile, everybody else has these like old sugar sacks.
Wonder if that's like a Sioux blanket, which would have been.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It's really sad. We don't have a million people in there, but for such a small community, it's far too many to be sick in one area. They're still trying to figure out what the source of the sickness is. Charles goes down to the ice house, which we get to see from time to time when we have criminals or
racists.
I would say the ice that they show is probably the most accurate to what it would have really looked like, because they would cut this out of lakes and there's hay in it and there's all types of things in the ice.
And more importantly, like, we are dwindling down. Like, there's not much ice left.
There's still a lot. A lot more than I expected at this point.
Oh, yeah, me too. It must be winter or something.
Yeah. And basically, Charles and Doc are having, like, a little bit of a moment in the ice house where they're just kind of, they're exhausted. They're just like, when is this going to stop? Because this is going to kill us.
Only find the source.
How are you going to find it? It's coming from everywhere.
I don't understand it.
At this point, wouldn't you call for outside help? I don't know what help you could bring to this.
I would imagine you'd want the whole town quarantined off. Like, I'd imagine you wouldn't want outsiders to come in.
Maybe they did that. I know, but who's doing it? Yeah, it's a crazy time. Also, we don't have a timeline. We're just not sure. It feels like a couple weeks, but I'm not sure.
I got the impression it was like three or four weeks because Laura was like, he was gone for a week. He would come check on us every few days for a week. So I think there's a few weeks going on.
Okay.
They live so far apart. There couldn't have been any contact.
So, yeah, they're freaking out. People are dying everywhere. Pa's comforting a sick girl I don't believe we've ever seen before.
Little Leslie Landon.
Is that, you know, I could not tell if that was her.
Yeah, it's Leslie, and her name's Leslie on the show. And she's like, Charles, I'm so sick. Like, am I ever going to see my parents again? He's like, oh, yeah, they're fine. You know, and she's like, well, you know, at least if I die in a church, I'll know. I'm going to heaven.
I'm so glad you pointed that out, because I was like, is that her? I can't really tell in the sweaty mess.
My question is, did she die? Because he's like, just go to sleep, you're not going to die. But she's obviously like in a bad way, and we never see her again. She just kind of shuts her eyes.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's just left to interpretation, I guess. So Isaiah is starting to wake up, which is funny, and he now has one of the Sioux blankets.
Yeah, and he's like, nurse, talk to me about Charles.
Funny, and you know what? As soon as somebody's making a joke or something or having any sense of humor, I personally think of it as a good sign, especially in a movie.
Yeah.
Well, nurse, what do you think?
Your fever's down a little bit.
Huh?
It ought to be. It near froze me solid. That part and the others are still all right.
They're fine. How you feel?
You can't kill a grizzly bear.
Now, we're still at the apex of this illness, right? I mean, all right, Isaiah might be coming around, his fever may be breaking, but there's 6 minutes left to the episode.
Anything can happen.
Well, and it has to happen. It has to happen pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in the next part of this clip, we kind of learn precisely what is going on. I'm just going to play that.
You bought that cornmeal at Peter's?
Yeah. 2 sacks for the price of one.
Get some rest.
So he bursts into Peterson's office. Have we ever seen Peterson before?
No, ever again. No, but it is the place, like we were saying earlier, with the cattle, the dirty Irishman trying to sell him the cattle mortgage.
Yeah.
It's his place. So after they ran him out of town, I guess Peterson moved in, and they're like, Peterson, open up, open up. And he is in a bad way in his own room.
Yeah, and I felt kind of bad for him because it's like nobody checking on him. Like.
Yeah, and he didn't do this on purpose.
Maybe. We don't know. We don't know. I came away from this episode when I was younger thinking he knew what was wrong, and he just thought it was nothing.
So you think that's why he was selling them so cheap?
In my mind, I feel like there's a missing scene somewhere. Huh. And I looked around, and nobody else. It's like a Mandela effect again. But for some reason, I always thought he knew that there was something questionable about it, but he didn't look into it. But
yeah.
I think it's just, again, I bring up fan fiction. So we're defeated by a lock, which is amazing, right? We're not going to look in here because we don't have the key to the lock, but we're Charles Ingalls. He kicks down doors. He blows... shoots through locks. I mean, there's nothing stopping this guy, but a little tiny key, that's what he needs.
I know. So they go up and they like ransack Peterson's place. They're like, where are the keys? And he's like dying. And then they finally find him like in the desk or on the desk. And then and Charles runs out and he looks like he almost trips when he jumps off the platform. He like starts overcorrecting and is running, but he's hauling butt there.
And he opens up the little storage area, and the music tells the tale. Those rats are going to town. Those rats are like, I love cornmeal.
I know. There's what, 100 rats in there?
It's the worst ever. And it goes on.
This time it's 100 yards away. We'll get Peterson to the church.
And this is what my wife would want to do whenever she sees like a daddy long legs or a spider. She would want to say these very words.
Burn this place to the ground.
And that's what she would love to do.
But they do. Oh my God, that is a raging inferno.
Well, I'm thinking they had to have it to be a pretty serious, serious fire.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't escape.
A lot of rat deaths in this scene.
Yeah. I love the music. The music is so like Hitchcock and crazy.
Mm-hmm.
We have a serious fire going. They're holding some gas cans. They are not playing. We get this crazy scene. It's like Hurricane Gloria, that's probably way before you were even born. Hurricane Gloria is hitting Walnut Grove, and it's like, what is going on? Just the sound of the fake wind is horrifying. Oh, wait, this might be a voiceover. This is a voiceover.
It was over, Pa said. He would stay in town and help Dr. Baker until the danger passed. He counted the days till he would come home.
Carrie is struggling. She has an apron in her hand. She's like trying to crumple it up into a ball and put it into the basket, but he keeps trying to, you know, kind of blow away. And
all these girls are in danger of one of those gusts of wind just like taking them with their bloomers as like an as like a parachute, and then just like sailing into sleep.
Or a stick just flying by and scratching their face or something.
I didn't even think of that. Yeah.
Those are the things I think about. It's just funny to watch. If you watch it at 46 minutes, like, whoa, this is... I pictured at first, I mean, because nothing in the background looks... Oh, no, it is actually moving. One of those big fans, like mm-hmm. they have on movie sets, but mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think you're right. I think this is just the crazy weather of the area. Mm-hmm. This would have been a little bit more effective, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, if they had turned this into a winter set.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is winter. At least it's aired in January.
They're outside in their dresses.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah, right. I don't know what I'm talking about.
But yeah, we have this thing. We also have a very strange moment where burning sulfur basically apparently sterilizes. Did you learn anything about this? I couldn't find too much about this, but there's this really beautiful cast iron cauldron that they have, maybe mm-hmm. a 2-gallon cauldron. And the color that comes out, it's right out of a witchcraft book. It's so cool.
It looks so witchy, especially with the cauldron. This like yellow smoke just comes billowing out. But I did learn that during the plague epidemics of the Middle Ages in Europe, sulfur dioxide was recommended to burn to disinfect contaminated premises and objects.
So I wonder if it does have some legitimacy to having a sanitation.
I will say it's certainly how they did it back in the day. It was very accurate, except that sulfur dioxide is colorless. But I'm sure that color was just for us. And it was a gorgeous, rich color. It reminds me of those, like, you know, you'll see people doing photo shoots with the, like, they'll put the purple one in the pumpkin and it comes out the pumpkin's eyes. That's what it kind of reminded me of.
Yeah, like smoke bombs. And which I think might be sulfur, now that I think about it. So, I'm making these weird correlations right now to today. I mean, we all have probably in our house a few too many bottles of hand sanitizer, which is mostly 99% alcohol, or probably not 99%, but probably like at least 70% alcohol. And essentially, I mean, that's what they had back then for sanitizing. And 150 years later, it's what we are using with a little bit of like a gelatin type product in it.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Yeah,
how just the correlations between this episode and nowadays, like it is a trip when you watch it.
Luckily, they found the source and they were able to extinguish it, literally. But
yeah, let's hope.
And here we understand sulfur, of course, smells like farts. So, Doc being the lighthearted Doc that he is, always the best bedside manner. We also have Isaiah in the front of the church. He's the only one out of the bunch that is outside the church.
Paul, too.
Well, I mean, that was ill.
Oh, yeah. And he's like complaining because his clothes are too clean. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Well, Reverend, that church of yours will smell like rotten eggs for a couple of days, but the sulfur will make it safe.
Well, we'll not soon forget these last weeks. Sometimes it's difficult to understand why God allows things like this to happen. But somehow when it's all over, instead of being weakened by it, we find we're made stronger. God bless you, gentlemen.
Edwards. Are you sure you boiled those clothes out real good?
Oiled them? They're so clean, they're downright uncomfortable.
Doc, why don't you go to sleep for about 2 weeks, huh?
I just might do that, Ingles. Thank you for everything.
Thank you.
So, yeah, Reverend said, it was just a few weeks, and they were just very lucky. Our final thoughts here kind of go to the end.
Carolyn's got a special supper going. How about joining us?
Oh, well, thank you kindly, but you know homecomings are kind of just for family.
Edwards, when are you going to learn you are family, huh? Come on.
And the rest of it, I mean, there's another 2 minutes left, but it's all visual, and it's very sweet. It's Charles pulling up. Do you want to describe what happens?
Yeah, and I think that's a very sweet line, too, about Edwards when he's going to our family. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was so, and he was so touched by it. So Mr. Edwards and Charles come in, and they come back to the little house, and Caroline just, like, runs over to Charles, and you know, all the girls run over to him, and they're hugging Mr. Edwards, they're hugging Charles, like, thank God this is behind us, and our two guys are safe.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a nice ending. No dog around, but that's all right. But it was just very, very, sweet. And I don't know. I thought that this was a really, really great episode.
Yeah.
And it does apply so much to the world that we live in today and tomorrow. So, well, there it is. We did it. The plague is over. But Kim, as always, thank you so much for getting together to talk about these episodes.
Oh my goodness, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored. I know this is a very special episode, so I hope we did it justice.
Yeah, I think we did a pretty okay job. You can listen for Kim on Unsolved Mysteries Rewind, still unsolved.com, and good luck with that show. I hear it's one of the best shows on the internet. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting One at Grovecast by heading over to patreon.com/oneupgrovecast. Any support is appreciated.